Well, hello again, everybody, and welcome back to X-Files Diaries. I'm Annie.
I'm Jen.
Today, we are going to continue our mythology series with probably one of the most important arcs of the series. We are going to begin the Dwayne Barry, I will say, slash Scully abduction arc tonight with discussing Dwayne Barry and Ascension.
Yes.
But before we get to those episodes, let's read some tweets of the week.
He's made outrageous public statements on an internet site.
That wasn't him. That was me. And they're not outrageous.
Okay. Tweets of the week. These are in response to our top 10 Mulder moments.
Woo!
And that was awesome. That was like a lot of fun. And it generated a lot of great discussion. Everyone has favorite Mulder moments. And isn't that a wonderful thing? And we enjoyed hearing some of yours as well. So from Sarah, MSR or Bust, the end of Tithonus, when he says, "You're a lucky man," to Agent Ritter. The way David delivers the line really shows that Scully is Mulder's everything. That followed by the way his face changes as he walks in the room to tell Scully she'll be just fine. It's just something. I so agree, Sarah. I love that moment in Tithonus. Like, yeah. You know where Mulder's coming from. That little just hint of threat in the voice. Hot.
Yeah, and I love that too, because that's such a tiny little moment, but it is a really good demonstration of his, not only Duchovny's range, but Mulder's range to go from one extreme to another. And yeah, that is a really, like, I love protective Mulder. And I love protective Mulder when Scully's not in the room even more. Like, another example of that, like, in My Struggle 2, which we hate, but there's a moment where he's, like, pointing his gun at Smokey Man, and he's like, "If you'll hurt her."
Oh,
yeah. Like, and I mean, I just, I dig that. Little moments like that. And this
was
a good example of that. And so, yes, very nice pick.
Great point. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah, when he's saying it, when Scully's not even there, it's even hotter. And it's like, especially if he's, like, saying it to, like, another man, it's just kind of like, there's something about that kind of sort of, I'm not afraid to show my devotion to this woman now. And I love that. From Like a Kid in a Candy Store, I would include in my list Mulder's mad driving skills in Little Green Men, Tempest Fugit Max, that head on with the plane, and then the Mustang drive in My Struggle 3. And also those emo moments with the child Samantha in Herrenvoke and Closure. Yeah, great points. Mulder so tender with his mother. Yep. So many. Yeah. Great choices all, Kid in the Candy Store. Those are all. That's a great range. Mulder does have a lot of good little driving scenes.
Yeah. That tweet like covered the gamut of like all it different really kinds of Mulder moments. But yeah, we were just talking about how hot that driving scene in Little Green Man was.
It's the hottest, perhaps, of the driving scenes, maybe. It's very hot.
Speaking of protective Mulder, like, because he's reaching over and he's like holding Scully's head down. And it's like, I don't know, it's like weirdly sexy. I don't know. I enjoy that.
It's just normally sexy, if you ask me. Nothing weird about it.
Right.
And I mean, I'm not like a huge fan of the Mustang drive in My Struggle 3, but I mean, Mulder does look hot doing it. No question about that. So there's that at least.
You know, he does, but he also just looks real tired. You know, he's old. You know, he's getting too old for this shit. I mean, let's just Lethal Weapon it, because it's true. And he's just over it. And I mean, he drives all night. He drives for a long ass time. And by the time he gets there, he is tired. But yeah, I
like the scruffy look. He's got kind of a scruffy look and sunglasses on by the end of that. I mean, he does look like he could be hungover potentially. I mean, I don't think he is, but he has a slight hungover look. But it can be considered pretty hot too.
I hate that car chase, but no complaints for how Mulder is looking in My Struggle 3. Because, damn.
Yeah, no. Woo! Nice. And you know what? Kudos for someone who wants to say something nice about My Struggle 3. There's not enough of that in the universe.
Yeah.
So that's great.
I will take it.
We embrace the positivity.
We do.
From the Robbins Gang, love this ep. One of you commented about how Mulder up until this point was always ditching Scully to pursue the truth. And then Annie, I think you had it as one of your top Mulder choices about Mulder going to Antarctica to get Scully. And the Robbins gang says, now he finally pursued her, and that made me think she is his truth. And yeah, well said, Robbins gang. That sort of pursuit to Antarctica was like such a magical Mulder moment.
Yeah, that's really, really well stated. One of the reasons why I think the finale of season 8 is so good, because he does say the truth we both know, but that was the truth, that he finally found his truth. That was a little bit of a tangent, but I'm just saying, I do think that eventually when Mulder finds his truth in Scully, that's the truth that matters. So yeah, very well stated. And of course, that is, he's going further than ever before for this particular truth. And it's her.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Oh, man. All right. From Shore Fine Whatev 3, hot angry Mulder scene in Unruhe. He realizes that the six fingers in the photos are headstones. He runs to the cemetery, finds the trailer, and starts beating at the window with a pipe.
Yep.
All while screaming, Scully! Yeah. Yes. Turns Mike Rank. New game phrase. Yeah, totally. Shore Fine Whatev. Yeah, that's a great one, actually. I love Unruhe, and I had kind of forgotten the depth of the hotness of that moment, but it's awesome.
I feel like I need to make a Mulder loses his shit thread, because
you totally should.
That would be like just full of hotness, and you're right. I almost forgot about that moment, and that's a great episode, but yeah, that's a really good, and some classic Scullys. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yes. Nice one. From Erica Deb. Erica says, I haven't listened yet because what is alone time in quarantine? Parents can all agree and feel that, I think. But I love Mulder's reactions to getting yelled at as a bad husband in Dreamland. Yeah, me too, Erica. Also, I don't remember the episode, but when he shoves the cigarette box in Spender's face, that is a great moment. And I can't remember the episode either. Annie, can you remember which one that is?
I feel like it's the end.
I feel like it probably is.
Yeah, I think it's the end.
If I had to guess, I would guess the end.
If I'm remembering correctly, I think it's the assassin who's after Gibson Praise gets killed in the jail cell. Yes, and Mulder finds the cigarettes in there and then gets real pissed because that was his, you know, his key to the truth of many keys. I think that was the end. But yeah, I love that too. He's like, did old Smokey put you up to it? And he's like smearing it in his face. That's a great moment. Yeah.
Love it. Anytime Mulder is bullying little brother Jeffrey Spender is good in my books, because Spender deserves it.
He really does. He's a little weasel.
From Isadub, you chose great Mulder moments, all with different flavors to appreciate Mulder. Thank you. I propose you this one. The wishes he makes in Jesuit. He has a great heart and wants to make things good for mankind, peace on earth. His third shows his compassion, freeing Jenny. Smart.
Yeah,
that's great, Isadub. That's a great point. I mean, his wishes go a little bit awry, but they definitely come from a good place in his heart. It's definitely, they do say a lot about Mulder as a compassionate person.
Yeah, I mean, I know, and we ourselves have given this episode some shit for you know, feeling like, okay, well, doesn't Mulder have a lot of things he could ask for that are sort of more selfish things? Yeah. And it kind of does, in retrospect, feel like it should be that way. But when I do look at it in the grand scheme of things, it does make sense that Mulder would sort of do a sort of selfless, altruistic wish, you know what I mean? That is rooted in compassion. I mean, and I buy it completely. And you're right, the first two wishes are a wash. So it's like, what is he going to do? He is going to do the right thing, which is to free her. We can say until the cows come home, he should have wished his brain disease away, whatever. But even if we knew about the brain disease, like, I still feel like that's a very Mulder thing to do. I really do feel that way. And I mean, you know, the idea of retconning notwithstanding, it doesn't bother me when I watch it that he's making the right decision. I just wish that we had, I mean, we've said this before, I just wish that we'd had a little bit more insight into his thought process. And I think it would have made the whole thing taste a little better going down. You know what I mean? But I do I do agree though, that's a very good Mulder moment.
Yeah, it's the final wish is definitely classic Mulder, because he does, as we've talked before, have so much compassion for kind of the oddballs and the odd people out in the world, which of course Jenny would be considered one of those, or Jen.
Yeah.
And like people that he barely knows. He wants to do good things for them. And it's always a heartwarming thing when he does that. So that was very in character for him in a sweet way.
Yep.
So yeah, great options and choices there as a dub. From I Cannot Justify. The scene where Mulder beats the shit out of Emily's doctor is like my number two moment. It's epic. That was one of your faves, wasn't it, Annie?
I think it technically didn't make my list, but we definitely discussed it because it was close to making my list. And yes, definitely super hot. Yeah.
That is another one, Mulder losing his shit, sort of.
Yeah.
So,
oh, yeah. No, that's no sort of. That's him losing his shit.
It's always like it's the best and perhaps most common type of Mulder losing his shit is something over Scully. And I mean, there are a lot of those options. I definitely think you should do a thread. From Fox Love, many moments. I also love the church scene. That's from Nothing Lasts Forever. And Mulder's beautiful voice, right? My thought of wonder how this would end was the outcome of their relationship and the show. Also like the end of the X-Files journey. A fave moment is also, you have to believe me, you're my 1 in 5 billion. And that's, of course, from Folie à Deux. That definitely came close to making my list. I love that moment.
Oh, yeah, that's a really great one. I feel like that's one I often forget and I shouldn't. You know?
Yeah, Folie à Deux is a little bit under the radar sometimes, and that is like a classic MSR moment.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe doesn't get as much attention as it should. So we're giving it a little bit right now to help to make up for that.
Yeah.
From Nikki Little Blobfish, there are so many amazing Mulder moments, many that you already mentioned. But when you said that Mulder was the true MVP of the revival, it just dawned on me how much I agree with that. Mature Mulder is such a rock, atoning for all the selfishness, recklessness, and pain he put Scully through. When Maggie's dying, that simple, I'm here, is all she needs to hear. And when he says he invented wishing someone back to life when she was the one in the hospital, oh, I know, right? He is her touchstone now, her constant. He does the same for her in Ghoulie. Just the way he holds her up, both physically and emotionally, is what I love about Mulder the most. So well said, Nikki. Oh, yeah, absolutely bang on. That's a really well-written way to put how Mulder is in the revival and why he is so awesome.
I take a tiny issue with the phrase, all the shit he put her through, because I know what Nikki means, but I stand firm with the idea that Scully chose it every time. I don't think that is taking anything away from what she's saying, but I do, and I think that Mulder certainly feels that he's put her through so much shit. But I don't feel that way as a viewer. I just wanted to say that.
That's fair enough. I think that sometimes you can choose something, but still not deserve what's done to you.
Oh, I would never say she deserves it, but I don't mean that at all. I just mean that she chose to be with him. At the end of the day.
Yeah, she chose to be with
him. She could walk away. She could have walked away.
She could, but that doesn't mean that he didn't treat her poorly on occasion.
Yeah.
Because he treated her poorly and she chose to be there. Sometimes both of those things can happen. And maybe not a lot, maybe not as many as some people might say, but there were a few times. I'm not a fan of ditching Mulder, for example. So anyway, another subject matter.
Yeah.
But excellent points, Nikki. On to Rachel. Rachel says, you know what I love? So many of your top Scully moments were about Scully being a badass, and so many of your top Mulder moments are Mulder when he's tender and supportive. Says so much about them and their dynamic. Really well put, Rachel. That's a really great point. It did kind of turn out that way, didn't it? And it's not terribly surprising, I guess, given the way that their characters are written on the show. But yeah, it's great the way that worked out that way.
Yeah, I agree. And it's interesting because obviously that was not planned, but that's the way it turned out.
It wasn't. But that's, you know, that's why we love the X-Files and that's why we love Mulder and Scully. It's because of how they're written and because they're not necessarily in the traditional gender roles. And if they had been, then I probably wouldn't have cared about them as much as characters as I did. So that's part of that's just, you know, the heart of their appeal. So it's bound to make it into our top 10 lists because that's a big part of why they're awesome. So That is all great. So thanks, everyone, for sharing your favorite Mulder moments and for reacting to ours. We always love hearing from you guys about everything X-Files related. Tweet at us at any time at XFD Podcast, and we look forward to hearing from you. So thanks.
Mulder, the internet is not good for you.
All right, Jen. Well, we are into season two in earnest here, and we are getting into the nitty-gritty. So before we start talking about Duane Barry, we should briefly mention, which I think most of the people listening probably already know, but at this point in the season, or at least, you know, between seasons one and seasons two, Gillian Anderson, actress Gillian Anderson, got pregnant. And that was the reason that they sort of had to figure out a way to write her out of the show for a couple of episodes. Yeah. And the entire Duane Barry arc, which is probably one of the best mythology arcs of the series. But not only that, it led into so many other things throughout the whole of the series. Like, I feel like a lot of the mythology, especially as it pertains to Scully and, you know, tangentially Mulder, hinged on this episode, or this I would say trio of episodes, but we're just going to be talking about the first two today, just because there's going to be a lot to cover. Wouldn't you agree with that, Jen? I mean, like, I think it's really great how things just sort of happen in the world of Hollywood and making shows or whatever. That's it's just kind of a happenstance thing that turned into such a great motivator for such a cool story for the X-Files.
Just this sort of like spark for creativity. I mean, I don't know what would have happened in season two if Gillian Anderson hadn't gotten pregnant, but I feel really confident in saying it would not nearly have been as interesting and cool as what they did, because it was a way for them to really get Scully into the middle of the X-Files story, instead of just kind of, you know, being an observer, essentially. And it completely changed the show. Certainly for me as a viewer, it did. It was at that point by far sort of the most exciting arc that I'd watched, and it really got me even more hooked on the show. So, and it did. It changed the direction of the show. It was never the same again. And I'm really glad for it. I'm really glad that they had to do something to write around this. And isn't it great that they didn't just like, oh, well, you know, Scully's off on assignment somewhere or something really dull like that. They were like, go big or go home. She's getting fucking abducted. I love it, because it just like, it was such a bold move and such a really interesting move. And it had so much potential for seasons to come. And I'm very into Scully's abduction, so I'm so happy about it.
Yeah. And I mean, to do it relatively early, I mean, keep in mind when they were making this show, they probably season to season were like, well, praise God that we got picked up. Like, they're probably they're never expecting to be picked up. And so at this point, this is when the X-Files, I don't think it was a huge hit yet, but it was kind of starting to pick up steam. And so they were probably in the position where, and I mean, I know we talked about this before when we were talking about like some of the Darren Morgan things, like they were more willing to take risks, I think, at this point. Because they had more viewers and they had a slightly bigger budget, and they were getting a bit more attention. This was definitely a go big or go home moment. And like we said, affected the rest of Scully's arc as far as it pertains to the mythology. Like, this is where it all began. We're going to definitely get into a lot of that today. So episode 5 of season 2, Duane Barry, which was written and directed by Chris Carter. And this was Chris Carter's first episode that he directed.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And I actually, I knew this before, but I wanted to just give him a little shout out, because I think this episode is actually very well directed. And when I think about, sorry, Chris Carter, I love you, but when I think about some of the revival things that he directed, and I think of what happened, like, I mean, it's really nice to see that he was at one point very, very capable of directing and telling a really, really good story.
Absolutely.
And this is definitely a great example of that. I mean, I think I know of the two,
And I watched both of them, obviously, again today for researching our episode. And these are just such good episodes, Jen.
They are, right? Yeah.
They're fantastic. And I mean, I know between these two, Ascension is your favorite.
It is. Though I love them both, they're very different episodes. So it's kind of like almost apples and oranges comparing them.
Yeah, and I mean, I think before I said that Dwayne Barry was my favorite of the two, but I might be walking that back because I feel like some of the things that I thought happened in Dwayne Barry actually happened in Ascension, but it is a legitimate two-parter. So it's kind of hard to divvy them up and be like one's like But we'll kind of seamlessly go from one to the other. So I should mention that Ascension is the sixth episode and the writer was Paul Brown and the director was Michael Lang.
Yeah.
Two different, like completely different writer director, obviously combos. And I do think these two episodes actually work really seamlessly well together, though. Like they
really do.
Especially like you said, for two different types of episodes, I feel like it works like a movie. It really did.
Yep. It really did. I was really surprised, actually, to learn not that long ago that it was a totally different writing directing team for both of those episodes, that there was no overlap for either writer or director. Because you wouldn't know it from looking at it. Obviously, they're different style episodes, but yeah, they're very seamless. And I was kind of surprised, I have to say, that, I mean, Ascension, which I think of as like one of the classic mythology episodes, written by Paul Brown and directed by Michael Lang. It's like those are not the names that spring to mind when you think of like top flight mythology episodes. I think Paul Brown, I had a little quick look and I think he only ever wrote one other episode. He wrote Excelsior Day. I do believe those are the only two episodes he has writing credit on. And Michael Lang has also directing credits for Miracle Man, Young at Heart, and Unrequited. Again, not the three most remarkable episodes.
Right.
So really interesting that, I mean, they really both just like came through and stepped up for Ascension.
That is really nice to see. I mean, I do think that there are definitely X-Files writers that have only done like a handful, not less than a handful of episodes that have turned out to be fantastic. I mean, like Jeffrey Bell comes to mind, who did Rain King and I think, Goldberg Variation.
Yeah.
And which were both great. That was it. And it always kind of astounds me, like, okay, well, they only go to these wells a couple times. Like, obviously, they only had this guy do it once and they only had. Mm. Yeah. So it's just interesting to see. But how well it seamlessly blends in with all the rest of the mythology. It works really, really well.
Yeah, absolutely. I was really surprised that it wasn't at least written by Chris Carter. So, really, like, it doesn't stand out as being oddly written or anything like that. So kudos to Paul Brown and Michael Lang for that.
Well, let's get into this, shall we, Jen? Before we talk about, because you guys, I know everybody is just waiting for us to talk about the scene with the red Speedo. And we will get there. Before we talk about the red Speedo, because we need to have people wait for the meet.
Yeah.
No, I didn't. Exactly. I didn't mean that literally, but
I did. Okay. So. we got to keep people hanging on.
I want to talk. I do want to talk about the cold open because I think that this is interesting to talk about in terms of. I feel like so we have Dwayne Barry in his house, and this is in 1985. So, and I did. I wrote down all these details so that people can remember because I know there's a lot of like timeline stuff going on in this episode. He was discharged from or left the FBI in 1982. So it would have been 3 years prior to this. Yes. And when he is being abducted in his house, he says not again, which means this is obviously not the first time this has happened. So that sort of lines up to me. But my question is for you in terms of like storytelling, because this is a bit of an unreliable narrator situation. Like we're seeing this kind of from Dwayne Barry's perspective. Like at the very beginning of this episode, we see that there are the lights and then we actually see the aliens surrounding him. And we don't really know. And I mean, they keep it quite vague throughout the entire series of who's actually doing the abducting and what we see it with Samantha, we see it later with Mulder, we see it with Scully, kind of like even in the pilot, like we see all these different abduction scenarios. And I know you and I, Jen, have talked about before what exactly is going on here. And even Dwayne Barry later says in this episode that the government was involved, like that he mentions like, yeah, I saw those guys, they're working together. Yeah. And so But there's obviously differences too. Like there's differences between the kids that got abducted and the pilot. There's differences between what happened to Scully. There's differences between happened to what Duane Barry, you know, like the implants and things. We'll get to all of that. But what is your take on, in terms of this cold open, what do you think is actually happening here?
That is a really excellent question. First of all, there's a dog. I just have to give kudos to the dog, and I'm glad the dog was okay. Do you think that could be the same dog as Ice? And is that David Duchovny's dog?
You mean his dog at the time?
His dog at the time. I have a vague recollection that the dog in Ice was actually David Duchovny's dog, and I'm wondering if this is the same one because he looks the same to me.
Oh, but maybe. Yeah.
Because he's another border collie. I had a quick look back at Ice to see if I could see if it was the same dog. It looks kind of the same. Anyway, super well-behaved, adorable border collie.
Yeah.
Shout out to the dog.
I love that dog.
I love that dog. And I love border collies. They are a lot, but they are adorable. But getting back to your original question, which had something to do with the X-Files, I think. really good question. I mean, the whole of Duane Barry, the episode, is very much about the unreliable narrator. And can you believe Duane Barry and can you not? And it goes back and forth so many times in such convincing ways throughout the episode. And it's so interesting the way that's written. And for me, as a viewer watching it, certainly the first time, I took it all as legit, as this is what happened, because certainly we're not given any indication at that point not to take it literally. There's no reason not to believe that this is what's happening. There's no sort of tip off that this is from a point of view that is not necessarily to be believed. And it certainly seems to be in the realm of possibility for the X-Files. So at that stage of the episode, certainly I took it as 100% truth. Now, later on in the episode, I start to kind of question it in retrospect. But I feel like the audience is kind of set up to sort of be inclined to believe Duane because we've seen this cold open. We have no reason to doubt it. It looks like any other abduction might look. And I feel like it kind of predisposes us to believe him, as perhaps Mulder was predisposed to believe him. But I think as the episode goes on, for me, it's kind of like, wait a second, maybe it didn't quite go down the way we saw it. But to me, there's no reason to believe that at the time. That's my take on it. What's yours?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think the idea is to leave it vague. I mean, I feel like they constantly go back and forth on what is actually going on with these abductions. And I think that's, you know, I think that's the intent. But I mean, I think as far as Duane Barry's abduction and as far as Scully's abduction, especially when we move into Ascension, I think there are some things, some differences and some things that I will definitely want to point out. But like it strikes me, though, and I mean, we can get into this, but it strikes me, though, that it's interesting that Duane Barry he obviously has something wrong with him physically, that we find out later that he has like a mental, he had an injury to his brain. So he actually has something going on in his brain. So it's very possible that he is not, that he is seeing things, like that he's making things up in his head. There was actually something I wanted to talk about Duane Barry. There was a blog I read the other day on Tumblr, and the Tumblr is PJ Stafford. And it was about characters with disabilities as portrayed on The X-Files, which was a really interesting topic. And I believe this Tumblr poster does like a series about this. So there are several to read. So you should guys go check it out. I'll tweet this one out. But she was talking about Duane Barry, and I wanted to read a real quick just an excerpt here. The fact that Duane Barry has a disability is clear. There is medical records demonstrating he suffered brain injury from a gunshot wound. The mental disorder is also apparent. He talks about himself in the third person. He is prone to mood swings, and he has distinct PTSD symptoms when he believes alien abduction is near. It actually makes some sense that an event of abduction and tests would leave one scarred with psychological impact of trauma. However, he is an abductee. Tests have been done on him, and eventually he is killed to keep from talking. Which I think this entire blog is really interesting. It just talks about like the idea of Duane Barry and even Mulder, like comparing the two of them about constantly being treated like you're crazy. Anything you say about alien abductions, it means you're crazy. And I mean, Duane Barry is treated like this throughout the episode. Like, no matter what he's saying is crazy. Even though we, as a viewer watching this show, we know he's not really completely crazy because we're watching the X-Files. But but as we're watching it, we're like, okay, well, there's clearly something going on with this guy. I mean,
he's
clearly
a little crazy.
Yeah, like one of the first things I noticed about him was that he's talking about himself in the third person, which was which was a little irritating. But I was just like, okay, well, that's just, you know, some sort of side effect from all of his trauma. But I love the idea here that that this blogger's pointing out that he is an abductee. It's like he's kind of mentally affected by his trauma, but he's all like by this gunshot wound or whatever happened to him before this abduction experience has started to happen, which I will definitely want to come back to later, by the way. But he also is really being abducted by aliens. So he's kind of this poor guy who's stuck in the middle who's like, well, he's a little crazy, but he's also telling the truth, you know?
It's actually both. It's a really compelling point. And it's kind of that goes to the heart of why I think this is kind of a brilliantly written episode, which is what an interesting idea to explore. This idea that, you know, it's explored several times throughout the X-Files that, you know, if you talk about aliens, people think you're crazy, usually in the context of Mulder. But what if you actually did have serious mental illness issues, or in this case, a brain injury, but yet you were also an abductee? What then? It just becomes so interesting and confusing. Do you believe him? Do you not believe him? There's so many solid scientific reasons not to believe him. And this isn't just, you know, a vague psychiatric diagnosis. This is an actual brain injury with, like, sort of scientifically medically established symptoms, at least, you know, in the universe of the X-Files. And so that makes it so interesting, this idea that there's every reason to think he's actually delusional.
Yeah.
When in reality, it turns out he could potentially be delusional, but sometimes delusional people are also telling the truth about things that make them sound crazy. So it's a very compelling situation, and it makes him a compelling character. So I think that's a really great, great point.
And I think this is when the X-Files is at its best, when we really have equal evidence to support Mulder's side and to support Scully's side. And I feel like this is one of those episodes where they demonstrate that perfectly, where you're watching it and you're like, I don't know who to believe. Like, I really want to believe Mulder because he wants to believe. But like, I see the documents. Like, I see what Scully is seeing. Like, I see all of the science. And this is, I think, one of the situations where we see that they are both right, you know. Yes. And I love those. Those episodes are great. And I do also love the moment at the end of this, and we're jumping ahead, which is fine, where he finally lets the hostages go, and one of the hostages actually stops to say, "I believe you," which, I mean, is such a great, I mean, it was a completely unnecessary thing to do, but it was so important, I think, in the same way, like, it's so complex. Like, this guy has literally kept you hostage for hours. He was threatened to kill you. And yet this person has this entire story, obviously, that she wants to actually say, "I believe you." And I love the complexity of that. Like, I seriously think that's so, so fantastic and such a great little moment to put.
Yeah. And it's good to have someone other than Mulder kind of be convinced by him, because, you know, one assumes at the beginning there was no reason for her to believe him. But in the course of this hostage taking, she is affected by his story because, you know, he tells a very emotional, compelling story. And so we can see as viewers, you know, Mulder's not the only one who's convinced by this guy. So Mulder's not being completely foolish and naive to believe this.
No.
You know, here's an average person who's falling for it as well, falling for it in quotes. Because at that point, it kind of seems like, as the hostage taking goes on, of course, it seems more and more like maybe he's not to be believed. And we start to sort of
Mulder.
See him differently. And And Mulder's role in that changes in the course of it as well, of course, as we sort of might change our opinion about Dwayne, then so we change our opinion about Mulder and his role in all of that too. So it's a very, very interesting approach. And I mean, to this day, I mean, if you were to hear someone on the street saying, "Well, yeah, I get abducted by aliens all the time. They're telling me where to go and I need to be there," you're going to think, "Yeah, this sounds like a little bit wacky backy. So I don't know what is happening here."
Yeah.
It's the kind of thing that would be not an uncommon delusion, I think, to have. There's probably plenty of sort of delusional people who imagine things to do with aliens. So it makes total sense that someone would imagine that. And it's quite compelling that, you know, he does seem, it does seem equally plausible at various times throughout the episode that he could be telling the truth or not telling the truth, or believing that he's telling the truth, but still being mistaken. So, so interesting the way that's explored.
Yeah, really good character. And I definitely should give a shout out. The actor who portrays Duane Barry is Steve Railsback, who I think did a great job. Like, seriously. This character is one of those that, like, you are sort of, you're empathetic with.
Yeah.
Even though it's like, he's like a bad dude. Like, he's knocking people out and he's stabbing people with pens. I mean, but like, he's a survivor. Like, he's just like, I don't want to get taken again. Like, I am done with this. And I mean, part of me, I should say, kind of admires that sort of defiance. And I think, like, he's clearly, like, I don't even want to really call him a villain, because, like I said, like, they're so good at making these characters so complex. But he's a really good character, I think. And the guy, Steve Railsback, who plays him, I think played him really great. So just wanted to give him a shout out before we move on to, you know, what everyone came to this episode to hear about, which is Mulder's red Speedo. I mean, come on. And I actually wrote on this, I'm like, it's a shame that they had to do this while Scully was not his partner, because how much would we have enjoyed an episode where Scully has to go meet him at the pool and he has to get out in his red Speedo? What were they thinking? I don't know what they were thinking that day, but I thank them all for it. Let me tell you.
Honestly, I mean, they could so easily have had him, like, shooting hoops or doing anything. But he's swimming in his red Speedo. Like, what an interesting writing choice. Yeah. And I'm very glad they made it.
I am very glad they made it. And I mean, again, this is just another one of those things that, like, adds the flame to the fire of, like, all the Krycek Mulder stuff. Because, I mean, of course, Krycek is the one who gets to enjoy Mulder in his red Speedo, which is unfair. Very unfair.
It is.
But
unless you're like a Krycek Mulder shipper, in which case it's like Christmas.
Right. But I am not. So I will just call it unfair. But I do enjoy Mulder in the red Speedo.
He's fine.
It's a great moment. And it is worth mentioning, because I literally typed Duane Barry into the GIF searches.
Yes.
And that came up. And when I say came up, I'm sorry. I have gone too far. But the Speedo is fantastic, and it is worth every 2 minutes that we've been talking about it. And so,
totally is. I mean, just when I think the red Speedo is maybe a little overdone, maybe made too big a deal of, I watch the scene yet again and say, damn, this is not exaggerated. This is like perfection.
Yeah.
There's no other way to say it. That scene is perfection. And it's enjoyable to watch.
I love the moments where, I mean, Mulder, I mean, seriously, take away David Duchovny. Completely take David Duchovny away from the idea of Mulder. And if you just had Mulder on the page, the way he is and what he talks about and what he's into and how he works and how he lives and how he is, you would never, ever think that anything like this would come of that character. And so I love the moments where we're like reminded that, hey, Mulder is a hottie and he's desirable and he's not just this dork in the basement. Like, he's got it going on, and I enjoy it and I appreciate it. And I've gone on too long.
I don't think you have. Not when it comes to the red Speedo, because, I mean, we could have done a whole podcast just about that, I think, because it just really brightened my day when I watched that yesterday.
I would gladly do an entire podcast about Mulder and the Red Speedo, but that's another topic for another day, Jen.
He just looks really good, and he looks very comfortable being nearly naked right there, and I just think that's great. Own your body, Mulder, and be proud. Why not when you look like that?
Why not? I mean, I would, and I'm not even a man. I would own it. But we should talk.
I gotta snap myself out of this.
We need to remind ourselves a little bit
of a dreamland there.
Yeah, that this is our mythology series, and we're not supposed to be talking about these things. But we cannot keep them out, people. We cannot.
No, we cannot. It's like physically impossible for me. So I'm glad we did that. That kind of like, whew, That was like a highlight of my day. So thanks for that.
I enjoyed it. Well, we should talk about Mr. Alex Krycek, who we have not mentioned since we last talked about Mythology, because he actually was introduced in the episode prior to this, Sleepless, which I will bring up later, I promise, as Mulder's new quote-unquote partner, I guess. Yeah, and so we're not fans of that, but I don't know, I kind of like the Mulder Krycek partner dynamic just because I love how like clearly unhappy he is to have him around. Like he's just such an annoyance to him, which I find really kind of funny. But Krycek,
well, I mean, Krycek comes off as a very annoying guy. I never liked him from the beginning, even when I just thought he was just this like super duper keener FBI guy, and he just annoyed me. I hated him from the beginning. I liked him much better when he turned out to be an evil bad guy.
Well, here's the thing. We knew that he was an evil bad guy prior to this scene.
We did.
In the end of the episode Sleepless, I guess I'll just talk about it because we're talking about Krycek, is where we actually find out that Krycek is working for Smoking Man. And this is all going to be important coming later because there is an interesting line that he says when he tells Smoking Man that Scully is a problem, a bigger problem than you described, which I love the how these tiny bits of dialogue indicate such bigger things. I mean, it's so great. And then Smoking Man is just every problem has a solution. And then bam, we cut and then we're into the Duane Barry arc. And so it's very, very, very clear to me that Smoking Man is behind all of what is about to happen. What is going to happen to Scully is his solution to the problem. And Krycek is going to help facilitate that. And we are going to see that bear out in Ascension. But when we even see Krycek go up to Mulder in the pool, we already know he's a bad guy. We know he's working for Smoking Man, and we know that Mulder's in trouble. And so it's just an interesting thing to see him now. Every time we see him, he's no longer just this sort of happy-go-lucky agent. Like, he's green, and he's trying to get his feet wet, and blah, blah, blah. No, he is after Scully, and we know already that Scully has been threatened. And even in Sleepless, there's a moment in Sleepless where Mulder tells Scully that X warned him that they're in greater danger than before.
Yeah,
which definitely indicates to me that X kind of knows of the plans that are afoot. So I think that's really interesting. I really like the way that they introduced Krycek, and I think that he, especially in this arc, the way he kind of weaves his way through it and then sort of kind of disappears at the end, is really very fitting for that character. And it's a really
nice introduction.
Even though we know he's kind of different now than he becomes later, we can still see, I think, we can still see that same Krycek kind of playing that part because he has to.
Yeah.
Because that's what he's...
Oh, definitely.
It's what his orders are to do.
Yeah.
I really, really enjoy that.
Yeah, I mean, Krycek is always such an interesting character. And yeah, he's Krycek from the beginning in a lot of ways. You know, he's this kind of slightly slippery guy. You're not quite sure what he's up to. You're not quite sure what he's about. And he's not necessarily just going to do what he's told. He always wants to know a little bit more than they're telling. And he's just an interesting guy. And I think for a while, up until, you know, partway through Ascension, I kind of figured he's really just kind of just there to spy on Mulder. And he's just kind of an informant. And he's just this Weasley informant type. And I didn't realize until partway through Ascension, at least, the degree to which he was going to turn out to be a bad guy. Not just that he was there to kind of, you know, be like, you know, an informant, but that he would get his hands dirty and get up to all kinds of mischief. And that made him much more interesting to me. And I loved that about him. So, yeah, he's a very interesting character throughout this arc. I think kind of at the end of Ascension, I kind of assumed that's the last we'll ever see of him. I'm not quite sure what the showrunners had planned for him at that point, if they were planning to bring him back. I'm assuming they were, but I never necessarily expected to see him again. And if that was the last we saw of him, it still would have been a really interesting little arc for him.
Yeah, I do think it's interesting, too, that it does appear like he is pretty new to the company.
Yes.
Or the corporation or whatever they call it, because he does tell at some point later, and I believe this after he kills Dwayne Barry, because Krychek ends up killing him, how he says to Smoking Man, like, after what you made me do, made me think that maybe this was the first person that Krychek had killed, or the first person that at least Smoking Man had made him kill. So
yeah.
I actually, that's kind of what I read from that scene, just the way what he said. I mean, I could be wrong, but that's just kind of what I read from it, that maybe he's kind of new, which fits with sort of his even Nick Lay's portrayal of him in these early episodes, is that he does still come across as a little, you know, new and arrogant and fresh, and I'm doing this because it's like my new job, and I'm, you know. Yeah. So I do think the evolution of Krychek was really well done, and I feel like when does he show up again? Probably not till like Anasazi, right?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, the end of season two, I believe he shows up again when he, you know, kills Mulder's dad. Or, you know, his partner, whoever actually ended up killing his dad.
But yeah, he shows up again then.
Yeah, but I mean, you're right. I wonder if, like, they were like, oh, we got to bring that guy back because he was a cool little henchman. And I mean, he was. I mean, he really is, because they can do so many different things with him. And I think that's what's so cool about Krychek. And I love Krychek. Krychek, I get really, like, anytime I'm watching an episode and, like, Krychek shows up, I always would get really excited, because I was just like, Krychek's back. Also, he's very hot and sweaty, which, you know, we've enjoyed before. But
yes, I mean, he's such a, I mean, I love that. I love the fact
we're here
that
for the important things, folks.
We really are. And I love the fact that they cast Nicholas Lee in that role, because they could easily, like, as a henchman, you know, henchmen are usually kind of, you know, these kind of standard burly guys. And he's more of like a pretty boy. And certainly he started, that's kind of how his character was introduced to us. And so it makes him so much more sort of like interesting, that he's kind of like, he's a pretty boy, but he can mix it up at the same time. So he's not just, you know, he's not just there to throw his fists around. He's, you know, he's a schemer and a plotter, and he likes to know what's going on. And it makes him very cool and interesting. So yeah, I'll always love Krychek.
Yeah. Well, we'll come back to Krychek probably a little bit later, but let's talk about this hostage situation scenario that is going on, that Mulder gets called in on, which is something that we don't really know why or who's calling him in on it, but later we know maybe what's sort of kind of been setting in motion. Oh my God. Do you see my cat, Jen?
Yeah, I do. Okay. I see. Who is this, Leia?
Yeah, do you hear her? She's saying hello.
Yeah, I can hear her. Hello, Leia. You're beautiful.
She's literally climbing up on my shoulder behind me on the chair, and she's talking into the mic. Okay, you need to go away, Kat, because we're talking about alien abduction. Okay. So
awesome.
She's pretty awesome, but she's very loud. So when we get to the, you know, task force or whatever you call it, whoever is in there kind of trying to figure out this hostage scenario, we meet Lucy Kasdan, who is played by CCH Pounder, who I think is awesome. And she's in lots of stuff. She's one of those character actors. I recognize her from many things, but mostly from Lost. She played kind of like a creepy character on Lost, which I always remember. But I wanted to point out, like, really early in this episode, the diversity is really good. I mean, we not only have a woman leading this task force, but an African American woman, which is really fantastic.
Look at that. That is good for them.
And she's a really cool character, because I mean, at the beginning, she's very skeptical of Mulder, and obviously we can tell right off the bat that everyone on this task force is like, this guy believes in aliens, he's so crazy, he's ridiculous, and so are you, Mulder, and that's why we're calling you in here. But then she, as part of this arc, has a little bit of an arc herself by the end, because she gets to come back and tell Mulder the truth of what she's learned, which she can't explain, and she knows maybe Mulder will find this interesting, and maybe he will be able to explain it, which I think was really a really cool choice, to have her be the one to tell him that, because he could have found all the information about the implants. He could have found out a different way. And so to have her come back later and tell him that information about the implants that they found in Dwayne Barry, I think was a really good choice, because it made this character, I think, more rounded and more likable. What do you think of Lucy Kasdan?
I love Lucy Kasdan. She's awesome. And she's just this, like, she's obviously very skeptical of Mulder. But a lot of the times when they bring in, I mean, I think she's an FBI agent. When they bring in someone from the FBI who's skeptical of Mulder, it's just someone who's a total jerk. And it's nice that they made her also smart and competent and kind of funny. She makes a joke at Krychek's expense when she's all like, I have something very important for you to do. Go get me a coffee. I love that moment. And because I love it when Krychek gets jerked around. And so she's just, she turns out just to be this really sort of cool person. And yeah, the fact that she could easily have not told Mulder about the implants at the end. She was not compelled to, but she chose to tell him. And that says a lot about her and her integrity. And I think it makes her, yeah, a really cool character. I wouldn't mind seeing her again. Kind of sad that we didn't, but she was a great addition to this episode and a terrific casting. I love CCH Pounder.
Oh yeah, she's great. And again, it was kind of like that character I brought up earlier, the hostage that came up to Dwayne Barry and said, I believe you. It was just, it's another, I feel like this character is another example of, and at the end of the day, we're never going to see her again. But at the end of the day, this is a character that we can tell is searching for the truth. Is someone who is very, is just interested in the truth. And I love whenever they are able to do that. And I feel like they got to do that so much in this episode. And so this is a really great character. Great character.
I feel like Lucy and Scully could have been friends if they had gotten a chance to spend more time together. Because I feel like they're on the same page in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And weren't, you know, kind of forced together in such a terrible scenario. But
yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I do think technically, we passed the Bechdel test in this episode because they are two women talking. I mean, technically, I guess they're talking about a man, but they're talking about like information and to save hostages. So it kind of counts. So we're going to give
I'm going to give it a pass.
We're going to give it a passing grade here.
And those are two, like, you know, good, clear characters, too. So, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Hooray for the X-Files in this case.
Yeah. Nice job, guys. Some of this abduction lore, I know we always like to bring up stuff when we're talking about mythology, that things that carry through in terms of continuity. They talk about these scoop mark scars, which we don't really hear about again until the revival, until My Struggle 1, when Sveta has these scoop mark scars. But these are just mentions of different things that happened during alien abductions that we can kind of correlate to each other to say there's some sort of continuous logic here, which I enjoy. The implants obviously are something that we get in kind of different ways, but like throughout the entire mythology. The idea of communicating telepathically, we hear we have that very frequently. The white lights, obviously, we see that constantly with the Samantha. We see that with all the radiation and everything all of the stuff. We see the white lights a lot, obviously.
Yeah.
And then this whole idea of being told where to go by these alien beings, which we even get that with Scully in Patient X, where she and Cassandra Spender are both sort of told where to go by their implants. I mean, these are all things that sort of kind of continue throughout, which I just like to bring up because it's just always nice to point out the continuity when it works.
Absolutely. Yep. There's quite a bit of it here.
Yeah, a lot of it. I wanted to also bring up, I don't know if you noticed this, Jen. I'm sure you did. But we see Scully in what appears to be her office.
Yeah, we do. It's exciting.
It's very exciting. And I wanted to say, we don't see it until a little bit later, but I was super sad that like almost like the last thing he said to her was like nothing. And then it was kind of almost like they were in a fight. Like he was almost kind of like upset with her or annoyed, not with her, but he was just kind of annoyed at the whole situation. And he kind of just got up and left out of the room.
And yeah, the conversation ended in kind of a weird way.
And that was the last he ever saw her. And so I think of that when I think of like her getting abducted and his guilt. And then I think again of what we've been talking about before, how when he screams at Samantha, get out of my life, the guilt that he then feels about thinking that's the last thing he ever said to her. Like how upsetting, right? Like it was just something that stood out to me as another thing that Mulder would probably take as a huge sort of guilt thing.
But yeah.
I do love though that like, he's kind of like doesn't know what to do, and so he calls Scully. Like, of course he calls Scully. He's like, Scully, I need you to help me because like no one else is gonna help me. Like, it's so precious.
Yeah, like quite soon. Like he doesn't wait too long. It's because Scully is his true partner, and the fact that she's not assigned as his partner is not gonna change that fact. When he wants some backup, he's gonna call his partner, and that's Scully. So, and she's there for him. she's doing the work that her partner should do. I mean, there's no reason why Krychek couldn't have looked that stuff up, probably.
Right.
Those records would sound like they were readily Krychek. Available. But he doesn't trust Krychek. Nope. He trusts Scully.
He
knows she'll
Scully.
Do a bang-up job. And
yes.
He knows that she'll understand and she'll see things from his point of view.
I love it.
And so I love that. And she, you know, comes riding in to kind of like help her man there. And she's – that's a pretty good Scully moment in itself. And she shows up to – help out, and she has a small but pivotal role in this episode.
I love when anytime Scully like busts into a room and tells everyone to just shut the fuck up and listen. Like, I mean,
yes.
Seriously, it's one of those moments where I'm just, again, I mean, we were just talking about that in Colony, and I mean, we're kind of like, if I had the future, like, there's lots of those moments where Scully just could be like, why isn't anyone listening to me? Everyone, listen, I have shit to say, and I just love her for that. It's great.
I love that, because it's such a common phenomenon, I think, for women especially, to be ignored, and especially in a room full of mostly men.
Yeah.
And she never lets that stop her. She refuses to be ignored, and she just, and it's with her sheer force of will that she makes it happen. And I love it. She's just a force of nature.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to talk real quickly before we get out of this sort of hostage sequence. I love the idea that they send Mulder in as this paramedic, and they have to give him this like super fancy like hearing device, because I was like, why are they going to all these trouble? I'm like, well, duh, it's like Dwayne Barry is ex-FBI, and so he's going to know where to look. And so it was almost like they were giving him this sort of high tech listening device that maybe Dwayne Barry wouldn't find, which he doesn't. So it worked. But
something that wasn't around in 1982, I guess.
Yeah, something kind of, you know, very forward thinking. But I wanted to talk about this because it seems pretty clear to me that like Dwayne Barry, it's obvious to me that Dwayne Barry has been set up for years to be just some sort of patsy for the company or the corporation or whatever he called them, because he. The accident, quote unquote, that happened to him in the FBI, they said that he was shot by his own weapon and left for dead in the woods, which suspicious.
Yeah, with his own weapon.
Did nobody look into that? I mean, like, seriously, was that they're like, well, this was a bit of a mystery. No, there's no mystery. Like, seriously, like, that's as suspicious as fuck. So clearly we know this guy was somehow, you know, taken care of in order to be this sort of abductee patsy. To be used whenever they needed him, whenever the aliens needed him, whenever the colonists needed him, whenever the government, the syndicate needed him. You know, it strikes me as and I love the idea that all these little kernels are planted like so quickly, but they're there. Like the information is there for us to sort of fit it in to the puzzle, and it's just really cool how they do set him up as someone that. Clearly, he's kind of moving of his own will throughout this episode, like he's doing the things that he needs to be doing. But under whose influence is the question, because we know that he has this implant in his in his stomach or wherever they find it. I don't remember exactly where they find it, but the implant that Scully thinks is shrapnel, because, of course, Scully thinks it's shrapnel. And then she takes it to the kind of cute ballistics guy. Right?
He is kind of cute.
Where's the fanfic where that cute ballistics guy asks Scully out? That's going to happen.
Seriously. They'd make a cute couple.
Yeah. So he is like looking up this this implant, and he's like, oh, look at that. That's kind of weird. Look at those weird little lines. And like, again, I love the idea that like this is clearly extremely weird, but everyone's like, oh, that's a little weird. And I mean, like, I just love how blasé.
Oh, well.
Yeah. I love how blasé everyone is. And like Scully, to her credit, is like, you're right, that is fucking weird. And then Scully, the wonderful, lovely investigator that she is, goes to buy her groceries, which she pays for with a check.
And she buys a lot of groceries for, what was it, $11 or something
she's
like that?
Wow. She's certainly not shopping at Whole Foods, I gotta say.
she pays with a check. It's like, would that be any more 90s?
Oh my God, I loved it. I was actually laughing out loud at the check. I was just like, really? But I love it.
Oh, the olden days.
She, because she is a badass investigator, is like, you know, I think this is a barcode. I'm going to see what happens if I run the barcode.
Let's just scan it and see what happens.
And obviously, it is a barcode because it's reading something. And I mean, she can't tell what it's reading, obviously, because it's gobbledygook. But I think this is such a great scene because it's like it not only shows us that something is up, which we already knew, but it shows Scully not only learning that something is up, but her intent that she knew something was going to be up if she did that. Like, she would never have done that if she wasn't expecting something to happen. So I think this scene is really cool. And I mean, I love the idea how she's like, okay. And then her first reaction is like to call Mulder and be like, Mulder, what the fuck is this thing? Yeah. Something weird just happened. And I mean, I really do love it. I love this entire chain of events here that is happening that leads Dwayne Barry to Scully.
Yeah, that's just like that moment when she scans the chip and everything goes crazy. It's such a memorable moment for me. That's just one of those moments that I can still remember how it felt to watch it the very first time. It was just like, oh, shit, what's happening? It's just like really well done and just very memorable. And yeah, right from there, right through to the end of the ep, it's an interesting way the episode goes for like the last 8 or 10 minutes, because it feels like the episode's wrapping up. They've solved the hostage situation. Dwayne Barry's gone to hospital. Oh, it turns out he has implants, but it's not over yet. We get all this stuff happening with Scully at the very end, and it's such an interesting twist and so sinister and scary.
It really is. And you aren't expecting that. Like, no one's expecting. Scully doesn't even show up in this episode until like halfway through, you know, and she's really barely in it. And so you're kind of thinking, well, Scully's not super important in this episode. And then you're like, wait, no, she's the whole reason for this episode. And it's a really cool twist. It's a really, really great way to tell the story. We should point out, I didn't make too much note of this, but clearly the apartment that Scully is in is like a different apartment that she is in like later, and like maybe later in season two and maybe in season three.
Scully's apartment changes a couple of times.
I can't remember
if this is the one that has the refrigerator in the living room or not, but
I don't remember that, but I believe you.
But it always looks beautiful to me. I love Scully's apartment in all its iterations. I think it's gorgeous.
You know, and it's totally just, you know, one of those Hollywood things. They got to change it up or change the set, or they're moving locations, or for whatever reason, whatever, we can forgive it. But it is one of those things that I have to point out, because I do really appreciate how they make it feel, like you said, like Scully's apartment. In every iteration, it does feel like Scully's apartment.
And it does. It has a familiarity. You know, even though they changed some major things about it, it still feels like the same place.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't think many people would notice unless they're crazies like us. But it's definitely worth pointing out that like Scully she's on the ground floor here. And later, I mean, especially I think in like season 8, when we really kind of can see the differences, we know she's on a higher floor.
Sure.
In my head canon, I'm always like, well, when she got returned, she obviously moved up a couple floors, because, you know, no one wants to be on the ground floor after they've been abducted out of a window.
No, they don't. And, you know, she might have been on the waiting list for one on a higher floor from the time she moved in, as a lot of people do when they move into an apartment building. So it might have just taken a while to for one to open up for her. So I'm glad that it worked out for her in the end. But I mean, like, how much more dramatic was it that she was on the ground floor? If she had been on an upper floor and, like, Dwayne Barry had like kicked in the door or something, I mean, yeah, scary, but looking outside and there's his face outside the window, what's scarier than that? So, and it's like thunder and lightning and the whole nine yards. So that's a great shot, actually.
It really is. And like, yeah, don't get me started on how Scully should really have moved in like season 3. Like, we, you know, there's no reason. There is no reason for her to still be in that apartment after all of this shit has happened.
Really?
But we're going to suspend
our
disbelief.
She really likes
it. She's probably
it's a great building.
She's rent control. You know, it's just so hard to leave. Yeah, I know my sister got killed here, but I don't want to lose that money, man. Like, that's a huge jump in rent.
Great location. It comes with a parking spot. It's like, you can't find that in that area.
Yeah, yeah. But we can laugh about that because it's pretty funny. And I do love Scully's apartment. So I can't
I
really.
I love her. I want to live in Scully's apartment, preferably with Scully, but on my own as well would be fun.
I do love her apartment. It's much nicer than Mulder's. It's definitely more Scully, and I'd enjoy that.
Yeah, definitely more Scully.
So yeah, we, poor Scully gets abducted, or at least she gets taken at this point by Dwayne Barry. She's
Something
gone.
Happens to her and it's terrible and scary.
And
I didn't know what was going to happen
Mulder's
at the end of that
help.
Episode.
She needs Mulder's help.
I need your help. It's just, oh my God, that was just so like, I just remember like practically falling off the sofa at the end of that episode. I was so frightened and scared for her.
Yeah.
I don't really remember knowing that she was going to get abducted. I'm trying to remember what I knew back then. I mean, I'm guessing I knew that she was pregnant. I must have known that. But I don't think I was aware that she was going to, when she was going to be missing or why or what was going to happen. It just seems like, and maybe I was just out of the loop. You know, other folks who were around in the 90s can correct me on this. I just don't remember being aware of, like, I feel like if this happened today and there was an actress that was pregnant, we'd just be waiting for to see how the show was going to write her out.
Right.
But I don't remember waiting for that at the time for some reason. I still thought that she was going to be back in the next episode. So I was really quite naive about what was going to happen.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you as a watcher at the time, like, were you worried they were going to kill her off? Or were you just kind of you were blissfully ignorant, which is probably the best way to be.
Yeah, I was blissfully ignorant for reasons that I think I was just kind of like just swept up in the universe of the X-Files. And I mean, I did talk about it online with other folks, but we never seemed to talk about like stuff outside the universe of the show. We were just too like, oh my God, what's gonna happen? And I just kind of thought it was gonna be kind of I had no clue what was gonna happen next. I kind of thought she would, something bad was gonna happen, but that she'd be okay in the next episode. It was to be continued. When something bad happens to a major character at the end of one episode and it's to be continued, that's because it's gonna get resolved in the next episode and they're gonna be okay.
Yeah.
And so when she wasn't okay in the next episode, I was even more surprised.
Yeah, it was like we had like
really upset
a little bit of her, and then we had like none of her, and then we had like sleepy Scully, and so we didn't have her. We didn't really have full tier Scully for like three episodes, and you know, so yeah, yeah. It is interesting.
Cool. It was. Those were just very intense episodes, and I was just very upset and worried for Scully.
So after all of this happens, you know, Scully gets taken out of a window, presumably.
Yeah.
We move into Ascension, and poor this whole scene where Mulder like goes to her apartment and like he hears her message, right? And then
he gets home and he hears that message and it's like, oh my heart, just rip it out.
Oh God. And the way that this entire scene is shot with like the flashbacks and him sort of imagining what has been happening to her, it's really powerful, really well done. And this is the a very important moment in X-Files history. This is the introduction of Mama Scully.
Yeah, well, it's the introduction of Mama Scully to Mulder.
We had her in Beyond the Sea, correct?
Yeah.
And but
Mama Scully and Mulder, magical combination.
Oh yes, and I mean, I think it's. I like how vague they've left it here. As like, it's possible they've met before. I mean, there really isn't like, and I think probable because there really isn't a moment where he's like, I'm her partner, blah, 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 blah. It's almost like they know each other in a way, like slightly. So in my mind, they maybe have met before, but briefly.
I always kind of thought they hadn't. Just the way he says Mrs. Scully when she arrives, he seems to be sort of questioned, like it's a question. Like, are you Mrs. Scully? Like, I always took that as like, I'm not sure if you are Mrs. Scully. But yeah, you're right. He never explains who he is.
No, I think.
And she seems to know. So I think you're probably right that they maybe at least met briefly before.
I just like the idea that maybe they've met before, but I think it could go either way. Honestly,
yeah.
I think it could go. And which is the way that the X-Files loves to do things. So
that's true.
I'm a fan, but I do love the idea that she has this whole moment with him where she feels comfortable enough to confide in him this whole thing about
how she's had this dream and she wanted to tell her, but you know, uh-huh. She wouldn't believe me. You know, like it was very sweet. Like all the things that she was sort of presuming about Mulder and about their relationship. I thought it was very telling in just a tiny little scene how much already that Margaret Scully seems to know what's going on between the two of them, at least in terms of like their dynamic and how they know each other, you know?
Yeah, there's such warmth between them. And you can tell that Margaret Scully trusts Mulder right away and knows this is a guy that she can count on. And she just seems to know it. And they just really click right away. And it's very sort of sweet. And I just really liked their interaction in that scene. And the story is just that Margaret Scully tells about, you know, having had this dream about Dana being taken away, as she says. It's very compelling to me and very kind of like sad and scary and emotional and sort of like, ugh, gets me in the heart. Really, this whole episode gets me in the heart. It's a very mythology driven episode, more standardly so, I'd say, than Dwayne Barry is. But it's got so much heart and there's so much emotion and character. And this scene is a really great example of that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, and we'll come back to some more Mrs. Scully and Mulder, mm-hmm. which is one of the really, really great scene that they get to have together later. But meanwhile, Mulder is sort of just being Mulder, like clearly not sleeping, not shaving, not taking care of himself. He is a mess.
He's a mess, but you know, the scruffy look does look pretty good on him, just saying.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely. I mm-hmm. have no issues with the scruffy look on Mulder, mm-hmm. but I have noticed, I pointed this out with a tweet earlier, that Mulder tends to just not shave when Scully's missing. And I feel like that's the only time we see Mulder scruffy. Is when
it's a very rare thing,
right? Like it's when Scully's gone in these episodes, and it's when Scully gets taken away in Antarctica. Like those are like the only times we see this Mulder scruff. It's like, I cannot be bothered. I am looking for my Scully. Leave me alone. And I just adore it.
Yeah, it's just kind of the sort of physical manifestation of the degree to which he has just completely disregarded his own needs or desires.
I love the idea that that's intentional. And again, as we say every show, if it isn't intentional, it's a hell of a great coincidence that I enjoy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree.
Thank you, X-Files people, for that.
Yeah, love it.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about, because I think this is very important, when we start to discuss who is responsible for Scully, who is responsible for taking Scully, the differences between what's going on with Scully and Dwayne Barry. And I think Ascension, I think actually this entire arc, I think, is telling us that the smoking man is responsible. In what way, I think we're not entirely certain, but mm-hmm. they say it time and time again throughout the series that smoking man was sort of responsible for Scully's abduction. And I think they flat out say, I want to say in season 8, maybe, that she was taken as part of a staged abduction by the government. Mm-hmm. They say that like flat out. So we kind of get that explanation later, even though we kind of are sure that that's, or sort of sure that's what's going on here. But I love the language in the episode, especially near the beginning when Mulder's there in that meeting and everybody's there, like Krycek's there, Smoking Man's there, like he's always in the background. And they're talking about it, and everyone's like, why are you so paranoid, Mulder? You know, but he is sitting there going like, none of what you're saying explains how he could have found her. And then as soon as Mulder says that, we cut to Krycek, who looks over to Smoking Man, and then we cut to Smoking Man, who takes a drag of his smoke. I mean, it couldn't be more clear. And I mean, I know we've talked about this before. When we were talking actually about our song choices, because I know Red Right Hand was on your source song choice.
Sure was.
And I love that we hear the song, we hear the beginning of that song while we are on Smoking Man, because he is the Red Right Hand. He is the puppet master of
all of this. And the way they play it in this episode is so freaking subtle. I love it that you could miss it. You could blink and miss it. And I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah. I mean, and it's clear now in retrospect, obviously he's responsible. He's responsible for all of this. I mean, everything that Dwayne Barry said in the prior episode, when he talks about how, you know, the government's in on it too, they're collaborating. Even though we know that, like, the ships and the abductions are all real, like, we see it. Like, we see it in the pilot. Mm-hmm. We see it in season 8 with Mulder. We see it even when Scully's, like, walking around in the desert and we see the ship. Like, we know that the ship is real, but we don't really know, like, who's abducting who and when and who's in control. And it's just really nice in this episode to see Smokey Man's in control. Whatever is happening, this is his solution to the Scully problem.
Yeah, yeah. That you're right. I think that that's definitely very clearly implied, although you do have to be sort of like paying a little bit of attention to get that. And certainly putting it together with that scene at the end of Sleepless is really important. That is such an important scene to the abduction arc. And I often forget about it. So
nobody watches Sleepless because it sucks.
This is it. Yeah. So, but that's such an important scene in terms of the abduction arc, because it really is just kind of laying out the motivation for it. Because even, you know, Mulder in Ascension is saying, I don't know if they took her because she had the evidence or because of her work with me and her importance to that kind of thing. But we kind of already know it was because of her role in Mulder's work, which is so interesting that she's too important to the X-Files that she has herself become a danger. And that's a pretty, like, it's such a, you know, it can be a bit of a trope having female characters be kidnapped or whatever. But the fact that she's kidnapped because she's too important to the work they're doing is at least a pretty cool reason to have her abducted. And I kind of like that. I kind of like that's the reason that she gets abducted. It's not because she happens to have the evidence, but because she's so badass and so good at what she does and so valuable to Mulder and his work, that this is the best way they can think of to hamper that work. And that's kind of cool that they clearly recognize her value.
Absolutely. I like the idea that even from the pilot, we get the idea that, like, let's assign this little woman.
Yeah.
She's not going to do anything important. She's just going to keep him at bay, and then we're not going to have to worry about them. But no, it turns out that the little woman that you assigned is too damn good at her job. And now you have to take care of the problem that you've created. And I love the idea that they lay that out. Like, even in Sleepless, when Krycek says she's a bigger problem than you described.
Yeah. Like, and they were already talking about her, which is interesting.
Yep.
But even then did not fully, like, lay it out. And Krycek can see it right away, apparently. Like, she's a problem here.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, not only he can see their dynamic too, like, not even just that she's amazing at her job, but just her devotion to Mulder and their devotion to each other is much greater than they probably anticipated. I mean, they probably anticipated this person being an obstacle, an annoyance, and it turned out to be the opposite. So, that's obviously not what Smoking Man was expecting when he assigned Scully, or when he was puppet mastering this entire thing.
Yeah.
So I love the idea that
up.
Yeah, here we are. You know, the X-Files are closed down, and you have not been able to keep these two apart. You haven't been able to keep these two from uncovering these truths. And I mean, I just love that. Like, we're so early on in the series and we're already getting that.
Honestly, like, it's so great.
Yeah.
And, like, Krycek can see it. He's like, you know, splitting them up has not solved this. It's only made them stronger. And yeah, that's like that's amazing stuff to hear at that stage in the series, because to hear sort of outsiders recognizing the strength of their bond and the power that they create when they're together is really very cool.
Right. Totally. So, I mean, of course, Mulder being Mulder is able to figure out
where Scully's being taken. And obviously, yeah, nobody expected that, like, least of all Krycek. I mean, and I love the idea that, like, for a good 5-10 minutes, like, we just see Krycek, like, straight out panicking. Like, he's just like, yes, well,
he doesn't know what's happening.
Yeah, he's like, well, shit, this was never part of the plan. Like, Mulder was never supposed to actually, like, and it was almost like this
there
whole...
There wasn't supposed to be a rescue.
No, I mean, it was almost like this whole staging of the abduction was almost, it was some sort of last minute Hail Mary, you know what I mean? Like, it's interesting to think about all of the mechanics that had to, or the machinations, I guess is the word I'm looking for, that had to had to transpire for them to get to this point so that Mulder could witness this abduction. And like Dwayne Barry, I mean, Dwayne Barry is so manipulatable that he can do, or is that the word that he can do any pretty much anything, and he's gonna believe it, you know what I mean? So I if Mulder wasn't present, I wonder if they would have had to have staged this at all, or if the whole idea was that Mulder had to see it. Like, I mean, I like...
Good question.
I think either way, and I mean, I wanted to say this too, because, like, Mulder, you know, Mulder obviously will do just about anything to get to Scully. I mean, he's going to threaten this guy with a gun who's just trying to work the skyway, and then he's like up on this tram, and he's literally like, fuck that, I'm getting out, I'm walking on top of the tram, like, I am going to get to Scully,
get there, like, nothing will stop him. That is a man on a mission.
It really is. And I mean, it's pretty great. Like, seriously, it is pretty great.
It is awesome.
I love this entire scene with the tram, and I mean, we could talk about
that.
I
adore the tram.
Yeah, but I wanted to point out, and if you have more to say about the tram, we can go back to it, but I wanted to point out, I love the idea that when Mulder gets to the top and he sees the car and the trunk's open, and he knows obviously that something terrible has happened, he goes to the trunk and he finds Scully's cross. And I don't know why this really hadn't occurred to me, but I suddenly flashed again to Fight the Future, the other time Scully gets abducted, and the same thing happens. It's like when he finds her little like her little thing that she was in, the little box, her fucking cross came up. I mean, is that like a CSM trademark? Like, he's just like, he's like, well, we can't take this cross. This is far too nice. We have to leave this behind so that Mulder knows it was me. Like, I don't know what that's about, but I love that.
Yeah, it's like the cross never falls off during any of Scully's FBI adventures.
No.
Unless she's actually being abducted, and then it just slips from her neck apparently every time.
I mean, it's like it's getting ripped off on purpose. I seriously feel like Smoking Man is there and he's like, get that cross off your neck, we gotta leave that cross behind so Mulder can find it. Like, I swear to God, that's what's going on.
We need to add, you know, CSM loves a bit of drama.
He really
and he just wants
does.
To add to the drama.
He's so melodramatic that I would believe it, that he just doing
I
it just
totally
to fuck
would,
with Mulder.
Actually. I oh can my actually God. Believe that. All I can ever think is, like, I'm like, Mulder, dude, it's a crime scene. You can't just take stuff like that. It upsets me a little bit.
Oh, but he has to hold it because it's he Scully's does. And he's so sad.
I mean, it's fucking fabulous. So it's totally fine with me. I anytime Mulder is holding Scully's cross, I have a meltdown of love and joy and angst all at the same time. So it's pretty awesome.
Even when he's wearing it while sleeping with other women?
I just try to ignore the sleeping with other women part. And I just imagine in my mind Mulder wearing that cross, and nothing else happens in that episode.
We could talk about that next time, because I'll have some things to say about that. But I do love the idea that Mulder finds the cross. It's a really nice moment. And it's like he knows for sure. This is what happened. She's gone. And like, I don't remember if there's blood in the trunk, but he finds the blood later.
There's blood everywhere.
There is blood. And I mean, he's like, he is not in a good spot. But
it's not.
It's kind of unclear to the viewer what's happening. Like, Dwayne Barry's up there and he's celebrating and he's thrilled that he's never going to get taken again. And we see the lights, but then what we see ends up being helicopters. Or at least what Mulder, if Mulder is saying it's a helicopter, I'm going to say it was a helicopter, right?
Yeah, that's the only thing that's kind of convincing, because at the first, because you see lights at two different moments in that scene. And the first time it looks quite UFO-ish, because you don't hear the helicopter sound and the light kind of like zooms away really fast. So it looks quite a lot like a UFO. The second time you see the light, it's more obviously a helicopter. But the fact that Mulder later on refers to, he only refers to helicopters, says to me, like, oh, okay, I guess it probably was a helicopter. Although at the time, I remember still thinking that it might have been a UFO.
Well, it's and that again, and I feel like we've talked about this before. It brings to mind like Mulder's sort of MO whenever like anything sort of personal gets in the way, he reverts back to being rational. Like, when I say personal, like even with like Samantha, sometimes like when he's like he's ready to believe John Roche has taken Samantha, you know what I mean? And with Scully, particularly over and over, whenever anything is going on with Scully, he immediately reverts to his not his normal way of dealing with things. And I feel like that this is present already in season two, this sort of way that Mulder deals with things when it comes to Scully, you know, it comes to like his personal life. And I feel like that's really interesting, is like he no longer wants to believe Duane Barry. Like his attitude has completely 180. I mean, when you compare the way that Mulder treated Duane Barry in the episode Duane Barry and the way he's treating her now, treating him now after he has taken Scully, like, my God, he is not playing around anymore. And I mean,
he wants at this point to
believe that like this is the government, because that's something that he can sort of wrap his mind around and be like, I can find the answer to this. Like, I can solve this. I can find the people who took her and I can get her back. Done. Yes.
Yeah, this is all achievable still at this point. You know, he asks Duane Barry straight out, did you kill her? So, you know, he's still entertaining that this is just a straight up murder.
Yep.
And yeah, I think it's a really excellent point about how when the people that Mulder loves are in danger, that's when he suddenly wants to believe in the rational explanation.
Yeah. Yeah,
it somehow makes it a little easier for him to take that this is a more solvable problem if we can keep it in the realms of the earthbound. Although I think that in his heart he still kind of believes that it could have been a UFO abduction based on sort of how he behaves at the end of the episode with going back to Skyland Mountain and looking up at the stars. That makes me think that maybe he thinks that Scully is up there. So I think that he maybe is sort of rationalizing it to a certain extent. This is his coping mechanism. It's hard to say
what
he truly believes.
I'm not saying that it's necessarily what he truly believes, but I'm just saying it's what he sort of reverts to when he's trying to sort of figure out what to do. And I mean, Samantha's an interesting example to bring up because obviously he's pretty convinced that Samantha was taken by aliens, but we don't ever get to see the steps that he took to get there. Like, we don't really, other than the regression, we don't really get to see those steps. So, I mean, I can kind of leave that out in my examples of like, okay, well, obviously Mulder believes in the paranormal. I'm not saying he doesn't, but I am saying that whenever like Scully's involved or something is just a little too close to home, he has to find something that he can sink his teeth into and something that he can, which I think is very realistic. And I like that about his character because it gives him, it grounds him a little bit. And I like that.
Yeah. I think it's a very sort of natural human reaction that when faced with something very frightening and traumatic, that the first thing you seek is control.
Yes.
And you can't control it. If she's been abducted by aliens, that's the definition of having no control. But if she's just been taken by the government, even if she has been murdered, that's at least something that he can do something about to some extent. And so it's a twist on I want to believe, except in this case, he wants to believe that it's something that he can do something about.
Right. And then it's interesting if you kind of flip that on its head and then you think about later in season 8 when Mulder gets abducted, that Scully is immediately convinced that he was actually abducted by aliens. Like, that's because the alternative at that point in their relationship, that he's dead, is just unthinkable. Yeah. And like, she's not going to go there. And so I think that's such a cool dynamic, like for both of them, for especially like in the location in the series that it takes place. I think it's just so interesting.
Yeah, very cool.
Love when Mulder's like, did you hurt her? And he's like, he's pissed, man. Like, this whole scene, where he just can't deal.
He can't deal through this whole episode. This whole episode, Mulder is just like unraveled and unraveling. And he's just, he's a mess. And he's doing all kinds of crazy things and like things that are kind of out of character for him. He's just so unpredictable and slightly ragey. And it's because it's Scully, and he's just so desperate. He's so desperate and driven to do something about this. And the fact that he's had no sleep probably doesn't help. No. Mulder, get a little bit of sleep. You'll probably feel a lot better. But yeah, no, he can't. He can't sleep when Scully is missing. God, no.
No.
He's just like on a low simmer for the whole episode. He's ready to blow at any moment. He's just right on the edge.
Yeah. Oh, totally. This was also an interesting, they also right out said, I think Dwayne Barry says that the military are responsible. He's like, oh, the military is responsible. I just like anytime they actually name like a specific like branch of the government or like a like, hey, this is who we need to blame, because they do come back to that well several times throughout the series. But I do think it's interesting how they, you know, even Mulder is sort of kind of believing him and kind of trying to figure it out. But this is, again, this is something he can believe. He can be like, okay, well, I've seen enough shit to know that this is probably going on. And he goes to find out the information about the autopsy of Dwayne Barry.
Yeah.
And a female pathologist, I should point out.
Yes.
Yet another female pathologist representing, who is essentially telling him, no, you know, the military's taking this over. You can't know, dude. And I mean, can you blame Mulder for being as paranoid as he is?
Seriously. Like,
everything that he thinks is happening. And so, of course, all the things that he says are going to end up being true. So it's just, it was just a really kind of cool way for him to sort of have to deal with running into all these dead ends. Like, he can't get there. Especially without Scully, because if he had Scully and she could do the damn autopsy herself, then maybe he would know. But like, he can't without her. And I mean, I love the idea that like, she's gone and he can't do the things that he's used to doing.
He's just falling apart. She's been gone for like an hour and he can't cope already, and it breaks my heart, and it's so beautiful.
I do think it was cool how when Dwayne Barry, when he's in the room talking to Dwayne Barry, and he kind of gestures at the window and he's like, look, that's them. And it's like the government people. And it's two people we don't recognize, and Krycek in that scene. And I don't think I ever picked up on that before, because whenever it flashes so quickly that I was like, oh, it's just government dudes. Okay. And then we're away. It's like, obviously those are the government guys. But I'm pretty sure the middle guy was Krycek, which is interesting.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, I have to go back and check that again. But yeah, that's an interesting sort of little element there.
Yeah, it doesn't seem super necessary, but I like the idea that like we know Krycek's a bad guy, but now we're like, oh, okay, he's part of this group that's like trying to.
Yes. He's just right in. He's really involved. I mean, we can definitely, I think the moment when we see the degree to which Krycek is involved with this, not just in the role of, you know, keeping CSM informed about what's going on, but that he's in this, is when he whacks that tram operator. I'll never forget that moment, because he gives him a whack and like he smooths his hair back into place, and it's just like, that's when like the true Krycek is born for me, because that's the moment when we see like the real Krycek. He's not just, you know, a little weaselly informant. He's a guy that's gonna, you know, he'll whack you if he has to. So yeah, from that moment on in the episode, you kind of realize, oh gee, this guy is not just, you know, helping out CSM, but he's a dangerous dude, and who knows what he might do. He'll do anything to sort of achieve his goals, and that's the first time we see him be violent like that, and it makes it it definitely makes him seem more sinister, I think, for the remainder of the episode.
Absolutely. So Krycek kills Dwayne Barry.
Pretty much. I think he does.
I think that's the implication, at least.
I think it's pretty clearly implied.
Yeah, he kills somebody, and you know, later he's talking about Smoky Man, how who he killed. I mean, and I don't know if he killed the tram guy or if he just knocked him out. I mean, I'd be willing.
Yeah, apparently the tram guy was missing, quote unquote, which we find out at the end of the episode, which is a little strange, because I thought it looked like he just knocked him out. I'm not quite sure why it had to turn out that he was missing. I'm not quite sure what happened to his body, allegedly.
Well, I mean, maybe he just got disappeared because he could have pegged Krycek as
someone came in and cleaned up after. I don't know. Yeah. It's all a bit mysterious what happened to the tram operator. I loved him too.
That poor tram guy didn't deserve to die. So
wanted to run the tram safely.
I'm gonna say that he was put into the witness protection program, and he's off running a tram somewhere else, very safe.
Okay. Nice. That's good. He just loves trams.
He does love trams, and I love him, and he should just be off loving his trams. And really, I'm happy. Should. Let's just stick with that.
But Mulder certainly seems convinced by the end that Krycek killed Dwayne Barry and responsible for whatever happened to the tram operator as well. So I think that, generally speaking, on the X-Files, if Mulder is saying something and he sounds relatively rational, then we as the viewer are meant to believe it as well. So that's enough for me.
Unfortunately, even if he doesn't sound rational, he's usually right. So
yeah, I mean, he's got a good record. So, you know, this is the X-Files. It's Mulder. He's probably right.
There is a really nice moment when he gets into Krycek's car. I love the idea that he's like, Krycek, I need to take your car, because it was a really great plot moment for him to find the cigarettes. Like, it was a nice idea. Like, I'm going to take Krycek's car and I'm going to find the cigarettes and I'm going to make the connection. And it's like, oh, that was just a really nice idea. Whoever put that card on the storyboard that was like, Mulder finds cigarettes in Krycek's car. Well done, you, whoever you were.
Yeah, it was kind of a neat little way for him to find out. I mean, thank goodness CSM is indeed a cigarette smoking man, because that is such an important plot device that comes up many times.
He leaves
throughout
like
the
clues
entirety of the X-Files
everywhere.
There's just like a trail of breadcrumbs wherever he goes, and no one else smokes but him, apparently, in the X-Files world. If there's cigarettes, damn it, it must be him. Like, you know, Krycek couldn't possibly have like a girlfriend who smokes or something like that. No, this is proof.
Well, the good thing is that we also have working for us the fantastic famous Mulder hunch, which we know is always right on. So,
oh God, yes. I mean, like the biggest hunch of the episode, of course, is the fact that they should go to Skyland Mountain based on something random he finds in the Yellow Pages. I mean, it's so weird.
It was meant to be.
It's, you know, ascend to the stars. He was right.
I love it, though. It's like they're fated to. He's going to find her because it's Mulder. And I love it.
Yeah.
So he knows now Krycek is dirty. And I love the idea that, I mean, he has no one else. So he has to go to Skinner. And even as a viewer at this point, we don't really know how to feel about Skinner. We know Skinner shut down the X-Files, and we're not happy about that. But we also know that Skinner defended him against Smoking Man at the end of Little Green Men.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's maybe the last time we saw Skinner. I could be wrong.
I suspect so. And certainly in a significant way.
Yeah, in a significant way, for sure. And so Mulder, he has no one else to trust. And he's like, he is ready to put everything on the line for this, because what does he have to lose at this point?
Yeah, he's got to do something.
Yeah. And so he's like, no, it's Krycek. You got to do it. There's a moment where it does appear like Skinner is about to like level with Mulder. I don't know if you noticed this, but he's about to tell him stuff. And then the phone rings. And then obviously Krycek has disappeared himself. And then Skinner like kind of clams up again.
Yeah. He was about to sort of spill the beans on how Krycek came to be Mulder's partner. And it was like, ooh, now what's the origin here? But we never hear the end of that sentence.
Because he says something like, I'm not the one who assigned him, but like, he was going to keep talking. And it was almost like maybe Skinner himself was working it out in his head, like making the connections, like who actually put him on there and where did he come from? Blah, 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 blah. And I love the idea that, and Skinner, this is so consistent with Skinner's character, and I kind of love it, that every time he kind of gets really close, he also sort of retreats, and he kind of does this, I don't know anything, and it's better if I don't know anything. It's better for everybody if I don't know anything. And I mean, it's actually a really good way to keep him interesting, you know? Because I feel like he constantly does it, like, he does swoop in and help when we need it, but then sometimes when we need it, he's not there to help. But we always get the idea that like he wants to help, and he's just in a really difficult position, which is another reason why I really think that episode we got in the revival with Skinner and like sort of kind of wrapping up the sort of Skinner Mulder Scully dynamic, I thought was really needed and important for that character. And so I'm kind of glad, I'm really glad we got that. But this is a great scene though with Skinner, and he does his tiny little bit of defiance is, well, the one thing I can do is to reopen the X-Files.
That's big. I mean, that's like such a moment. It's just, Skinner is so interesting. And I think you're absolutely right that he's kind of starting to figure it out in the course of that scene. That, you know, he's, you know, pretty skeptical at first about what this stuff is, this accusation that Mulder's making, you know, here's Mulder making trouble again. But the more he thinks about it, and then, of course, you know, Krycek's missing, and yeah, by the end of the scene, he's on board. He's like, you know, there's one thing I can do. And yeah, it's always interesting, Skinner's role in Mulder and Scully's lives. He's not, you know, he's not going to be 100% there for them all the time, because he can't be. And if he was, he wouldn't be able to maintain the position that he's in to help them at all. So you never know quite which side of the fence he's going to fall on, especially at this point in the series. You know, you kind of have a sense that you can probably trust him, but you never know what he's actually going to do, because you never know how far he's willing to go. So with that moment at the end where he says, you know, I'm going to reopen the X-Files, is like, hooray, because you don't necessarily see it coming. Yeah. And it's a great moment.
It is. And you're also thinking, like, but what about Scully? We can't have the X-Files without Scully. But
it's a hollow victory.
It is a hollow victory. But hopefully, but luckily, soon enough, it will be fulfilled.
Yeah, it's all fun.
Before we talk about this final scene, I know you would love to, that you're going to love to talk about. I do want to make two more mentions that are important for the mythology buffs. We do hear that we see that Mulder goes to visit the senator, Senator Matheson, and and he runs into Mr. X, who says, yes, you know, you're not going to get far. He's essentially been silenced. I mean, I think Mulder's resources have been pulled away. We don't really know why, but I mean, I can assume that he's a politician and they have something on him. And if he does anything to help Mulder, he's going to be ruined. That's kind of
exposed in some fashion.
Which I think is totally appropriate and totally interesting and very sort of relevant, because you do think about that often, like, why do politicians do the things they do? Oh, because they're gonna get ruined if they do XYZ. Someone's got something on them. I mean, it's all just a bunch of bullshit, really. And it makes
That's totally believable.
But I mean, at the same time, we love Senator Matheson, so it's kind of sad that we're not gonna see him again until what, season 6? It's kind of sad.
Yeah, but at least attached to him.
At least they did explain here what happened, because I do remember they didn't really give us any sort of wrap up on him in Little Green Men. And so here at least you get the idea that well, we're not gonna be hearing from him again, you know?
Yeah. No, that they kind of explained his absence in an efficient and believable way.
Exactly. And then obviously we get to see Mr. X. Is this, forgive me, have we seen Mr. X before?
I think literally seen him. I was thinking the same thing tonight, and I was hoping you would remember. But my recollection is this is the first time we see him.
That, like, we're actually meeting him.
We've heard his voice.
Yeah,
before,
on the phone.
Like on the phone. Or in shadows, I think, maybe. But this is certainly the first time, because it's kind of this dramatic moment where he's in shadow.
Yeah.
And he steps into the light. And it's like, ooh, this is what the mysterious Mr. X looks like. And so I think it's meant to be kind of like this dramatic unveiling of him as a character.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I know if we're wrong, that people will tell us that we're wrong. So it's all good.
Yeah.
But I think, too, they indicate the idea that that there's a leak in Sleepless. Again, that important last 5 minutes of Sleepless, guys, go check out go to Hulu, watch the last 5 minutes.
They should have tacked it on to the start of Dwayne Barry or somehow.
Well, I mean, they shouldn't have, though, because I love the idea that they sort of put these important bits where people aren't going to see them, because then later they can be like, hey, it was there, not our fault you missed it. And I love that.
I've probably watched Sleepless like one time in my life, so
I
completely forgot that scene existed. And yeah, it's my own darn fault for not treating all episodes equally important.
But they indicate in Sleepless that there's a leak. Like, I know what they said, that we don't know where Mulder got it. He got it from a source outside, because I think X was present in Sleepless because X was obviously feeding Mulder the information.
Yeah.
But we didn't.
He has a role to play in Conduit. Not Conduit.
No, not that early.
The host.
Host. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He says you have a friend in the FBI, right?
Yes.
Yes.
So, I think that's the first time he
we hear him
of the story. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we hear him at that point. But yeah, this is certainly the first time that we see him, I think.
I think so. I don't think we
see
him in Sleepless.
So yeah, he has a small, very small role in The Host. And he's got some kind of a presence in Sleepless. But this is, you know, the first time we see him. So this is his proper debut, I would say.
Yeah. So cool introduction to Mr. X. And he does say one of the classic X-Files lines, which is deny everything.
Deny everything. It's the tagline for this episode.
Is it?
Yes, it is.
I missed that.
I love it because in I frequently mention the Mark Snow CD, The Truth and the Light, from way back in 93 or something like that, that came out. 95 or 96. And they've got like voice samples from various episodes with the music. And one of those samples on the CD is X saying, "Deny everything," and it's done in a real cool sort of, they'd done something cool digital with his voice. And so whenever I hear him say that line, I'm just I just remember hearing it on that CD like 100 times every time I listen to it. So it's a very classic line for me.
That's awesome. I love it. Well, I know that one of the scenes in this episode, the last scene of this episode, is probably one of your favorite scenes. So I'm going to let you take it away, Jen, and talk about Mulder and Maggie.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's so beautiful. It's a little unclear at first, like, why they're together. Why it appears that Mulder has called her in, and she's wondering why. Like, yeah. She's wondering, do you have any more information? And he doesn't. So I kind of get the idea that he just wanted to chat and or give her the cross, that those are sort of the two possible reasons that he actually called her in. I mean, he could have just chatted with her on the phone or whatever, but no, he wanted to meet her, and she seems like more than happy to chat with him. And yeah,
she's very comfortable with him.
Very comfortable with him. She brings up about the dreams again that she's having, and you know, Mulder says, you know, I think it's scarier when you stop having the dream. And that seems to bring her like immense comfort. For me, I'm not sure it would, but for her, it does, which is great. And
I mean, she understands, I think, that he's trying to comfort her.
Yeah, she really appreciates it. They get each other. And it's their shared sort of...
love for Scully.
Their shared love for Scully and their shared... devastation at her disappearance, and like they just get each other because they're each going through this. They each understand it more than anyone else in the world, essentially, at that moment. And that's just a real sort of compelling connection between them. And I think that Mulder gives her a little bit of hope, and of course he tries to give Maggie the cross back, and she gives it back to him in this beautiful, beautiful moment and tells him, you give it to her when you find her. And so she's giving him hope as well. And so, you know, they're both just very sort of like broken people at this moment, but they are, they're kind of holding each other up. And it's kind of a beautiful thing because all they have is each other at that moment in this. And I just love them together, and I love that scene. It's very sort of moving and very, it's like the emotional heart of the episode, I think. And it sort of leads into the very final scene of poor Mulder up on that mountain, just kind of staring at the sky as if like maybe a UFO will show up and drop Scully off. So it's just, that is so heartbreaking. I distinctly remember the next day, back in the day when we used to talk about this kind of thing around the water cooler at the office, one of my coworkers, who I barely knew, but who turned out to be watching The X-Files, we were talking about that final scene and how sad it was. And he was just like this big burly guy, my coworker, but he's still like, oh, that was so sad with Mulder on the mountain at the end. He just misses Scully so much. So it definitely made an impression, that whole final scene, the whole final sequence, the whole episode. The whole episode is really, really well paced, and I really like the way it's put together, and I like the fact that it's kind of bookended a bit with the sort of Mulder Maggie scenes at the beginning and the end, and the tone that it sets of, you know, it's very angsty with like a little undercurrent of hope, which of course is the X-Files writ large, really, and you know what I love about the X-Files. So it's a super angsty episode, so no wonder I love it so much.
Yeah, no, I love that episode I love that scene at the end of the two of them talking. I think it's really great. I do see a degree of comfort there. And I mean, I don't know if Mulder's just sort of naturally comfortable with her, but I don't know. It just kind of speaks to me that maybe they have had a few conversations in the past that they don't, I'm not saying they know each other, but that they've met. And like she knows that he is someone worth trusting.
Yeah. Yeah. And he obviously trusts her completely as well, which he doesn't tend to trust people quite that readily.
Well, I don't know about that. I think that, like, Mulder would like people to believe that he doesn't trust anyone, but I think he trusts, he's more trusting than I think he should be.
Mm. He wants to trust people desperately.
Yeah, he wants to, which I think is just one of the great things about his character. But
yeah,
it's a really nice little scene. And my God, that scene of him looking up at the stars at the end is so, it's just, you think about him probably doing that all the time anyway because of Samantha. Yeah. And then, yeah. And now, like, Scully's gone, and he's just like, what the fuck is my life? Like, poor Mulder.
I know, honestly. It's just, I think about that scene when, in Field Trip, which we talked about before, where male character, Wallace, in that episode, is talking about his wife having been abducted, and he's just so desperate and frustrated, like, what do I do? And to me, it's such an echo of Mulder at that moment, mm-hmm. when Mulder is just like, she's gone and I don't know what to do. Someone tell me what to do. And he just seems so filled with desperation and fear and heartbreak. And it's just like, it's just really, like, so beautifully done, beautifully shot, great music, great acting. I love that last scene. It's very memorable.
And we know now that, that whole scene with Wallace is Mulder's own mind, you know, just making things up. So it really does fit well, that sort of desperation. It's really nice.
Yeah, I really feel it. I really feel it from Mulder at that moment. It's a really beautifully done bit at the end. So I love it. I love Skyland Mountain.
Well, I mean, we've pretty much covered everything. Is there anything else we missed that you wanted to talk about, Duane Barry or Ascension?
I don't think so. I think we really did a nice, thorough job, which I appreciated because I love talking about these episodes. They just have a very special place in my heart, and they're right up there. Ascension especially is definitely one of my favorite episodes and for sure one of my favorite mythology episodes, so... I just remember I just have such clear memories of watching these episodes when they first aired and the impact that they had. And that will never change. Every time I watch it, I still feel it. They're still great episodes. Even, you know, we've had a lot of great episodes after that. But these ones still stand up and I still love them. So I'm really glad that we had a chance to talk about them and to put them into the context of the mythology.
How are you doing with this rewatch, Jen? I mean, are you kind of enjoying going through the mythology a little bit? Like, so far, so good?
Yeah, I'm really loving it. And I'm loving your assistance and guidance in helping me understand the bits and pieces along the way that I really didn't understand that well when I was watching them at the time, because at the time I was just waiting for Mulder and Scully to hold hands and didn't pay very careful attention to what else was going on. So I missed a lot of the clues the first time around about what was going on with Scully's abduction. And it's only been in recent years that I finally started to put the pieces together. So I appreciate the chance to do that again. And to continue building my foundation of understanding of the mythology, I'm going to see how far this Jenga tower can go before it topples over. But so far, so good. I still feel like it's pretty stable.
It's funny because, I mean, we're only in season two, but like I don't think we've watched a mythology episode that I didn't like. I feel like all the ones we've watched still have been very strong.
Very strong. These are the early season mythology episodes are the best. These are all like real favorites of mine still, for sure.
Yeah, cool. Well, I'm really excited to get into more. You guys, if you have more to add or more to, you know, talk about, please let us know at XFD Podcast. We're having a great time going through the mythology with you guys.
Yeah.
And we will be back in a couple weeks with another episode of X-Files Diaries. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Thank you.